Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hello there, folks. I'm Lynn. I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone, along with my terrific co-host, Bobby Meir, Robert, and Dave. Hey, guys. And
hello,
all. Hello. Hello.
Nothing like the talk of Civil War and magic.
Well, I was actually going to stand here perfectly still and quiet and listen.
You guys are too much. But hey, by the way, speaking of magic and superstition, I can report something today that I can't report very often. It's a warm, sunny day here in Seattle, Washington. Yay! Almost keeps me from being homesick for Philadelphia. Nah. Almost, but not quite. It's supposed to rain here.
See, we missed that. We have to get that on there now.
Well, it's supposed to rain here most of next week. So, oh well. You know, I knew it wasn't going to last. I'll enjoy it while it lasts. But it's only for today, maybe part of tomorrow. But anyway, sunny day in Seattle is rare, and I'll just, you know, enjoy it for the short time that we have it. Anyway, today's episode.
Well, Lynn,
is called,
you know, one bright point. There in Seattle is your significant other wanted to wish Bobby from the Talking Twilight Zone group happy birthday. Happy birthday, Bobby.
Thank you very much. I'm deeply honored. Thank God, Paul McCartney is still older than I am, so I don't feel too bad.
Yeah, 39th birthday, guy. Oh, that's great. Thank you for that, Robert. Thank you very much. And, okay, well, that's great. I like that. So today's episode is called Still Valley. And as always, I will now turn it over to Robert for that opening clip.
Come along and ride this train. Come along and ride this train. Cross the mountains, prairies, reservations, rivers, levees, plains. Come along and ride this train.
And now, Mr. Serling.
The time is 1863. The place, the state of Virginia. The event is a mass bloodletting known as the Civil War. A tragic moment in time when a nation was split into two fragments, each fragment deeming itself a nation. This is Joseph Paradis, Confederate cavalry, as he heads down toward a small town in the middle of a valley. But very shortly, Joseph Paradis will make contact with the enemy. He will also make contact with an outpost not found on a military map, an outpost called the Twilight Zone.
Thank you for that, Robert. Thank you. You always go above and beyond the call of duty.
Well, we know what today's episode is going to be like. So.
That's right. We need a little extra something.
Yeah, you know it's one of them things, so.
Well, like it's something. Yeah. Well, in Still Valley, okay.
Oh, wait a minute. We've got a call coming in. Hang on.
We've got a call.
Hello. Yeah. Well, yeah, doing fine. It's been a while since you've been on the show last. Okay. Well, let me ask Lynn. Lynn, this special guest wants to know if they can, when you give your ratings, if they can give their opinion after you get done.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'll let them know that. Okay. Come on in. And Lynn says, okay. Okay. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
I have a feeling I know who this is. Alrighty then. Well, in Still Valley, okay, their summary of the show, a Confederate scout named Paradine. I don't know if you want to pronounce it Paradine. I think they pronounce it Paradine. Decides to check out a nearby town. He thinks the Yankees have taken refuge there. But when he gets there, he not only finds it filled with Union soldiers, but Union soldiers that are all frozen still. They're under a spell cast by an old man practicing some serious black magic. And the old man, he knows he's going to die soon, so he gives his book of black magic to Paradine and begs him to use it to win the war. So Paradine returns to his camp with the book, and he pretty much convinces his commanding officer to let him cast a spell that will freeze the entire Union army. However, upon further reading, Paradine realizes that in order to do this, he must call upon the devil and renounce God. Well, he knows he can't do this, you know, not be being brought up the way he was, a God-fearing man. So he throws the book into the fire, believing that if he uses such a book, the Confederates will be doomed. So they proceed on to fight and badly lose a battle in a little town called Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Well, that's the summary of this. I mean, you can't go too much into it, because there isn't really much more to say. I mean, the ending of this episode, it couldn't have been much different without Rod.
Well, you know what? It would have been interesting, Lynn, and instead of reading the synopsis for that, you should read the synopsis from ULG. That would have matched up real well.
From where?
Remember?
Oh, yeah. From Melody. Exactly. Well, you know, this episode, Rod Serling, unless he rewrote history, you know, you couldn't change the ending of the story. I mean, of course, the Confederates did lose the Civil War quite badly.
Sinking,
right? Exactly. You can't change these things. You can't change history here. So, but one thing that absolutely can't be changed is that, in my opinion, Still Valley is one of the biggest disappointments of season 3. I mean, come on, it's a slow episode. It's a boring episode, and as you just mentioned, which is true, the most disappointing aspect is that Rod Serling seemed to have forgotten that Charles Beaumont already wrote the space version of this story in season 1's Elegy, which is only slightly...
I always call it Eulogy because that's what I felt about it.
Eulogy, and that's what it should have been. That's what it should have been called. And that was only slightly, I do mean slightly better than this episode, only slightly. Rod adapted Still Valley from a short story by Manly Wade Wellman, and that story was titled The Valley Was Still. But nevertheless, the two episodes, Elegy and Still Valley, are still very similar, except the old man who was responsible for the frozen people in Elegy, that was played by Cecil Kellaway. And I got to tell you, Cecil, I don't know, again, however you want to pronounce it, Cecil Kellaway, I liked his character, I thought, was very likable. I always liked the man. So I thought he was much more likable than Vaughn Taylor's character in Still Valley. And I don't know how many of you know this or recall this, but Vaughn Taylor, he played Henry Bemis's boss, rather unsympathetic boss, in Time Enough at Last. And then, of course, he appears again in season 3 in I Sing the Body Electric. He's the guy who tries to tell everybody what parts to buy for the robot they want to get. But, Vaughn Taylor's been in a few episodes in the Twilight Zone. And Gary Merle, I mean, he does a decent enough job as a Confederate scout. You know, he plays Paradine. But the sad thing is this episode is so mediocre. It's just so forgettable that it's barely watchable. And one thing that I read while doing some research on this episode was that in the original short story, the old man is decapitated by the story's hero. And Rod wouldn't write that scene in the script because it was too gruesome. Now, I actually think he should have, because I think it would have helped. I mean, this episode needed all the help it could get. I think, you know, most people would agree that, you know, that this episode could have used a little bit more excitement. And I also think most people would agree that one of the downfalls of doing scenes that require actors to remain motionless is that some of them, I wouldn't say most of them, but some of them, they just can't do it. And in this episode, just the same way it was in Elegy, you can definitely see little movements here and there from various people, especially when Paradine was walking through the Union troops. I mean, you saw arms moving, you saw heads moving, you saw flags moving. You know, you just can't, unless you do still frames, you just can't do it. So, you know, that's kind of tough for either of those episodes. You always saw the people moving. And one other thing that emphasized just how, to me anyway, how mediocre and unoriginal this episode was the name of the black magic book. It was simply called Witchcraft. I mean, come on. Couldn't they come up with a more intriguing, original name for the book than that? You know, something like that. Yeah, something like that. Like,
we would do that when you open a book. That would have been nice.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? You open the first page and something. They're calling a book about old black magic. Something, I don't know, but witchcraft. I don't know. There's really not much I could say about Still Valley other than that. I mean, overall, it was just a poor and to me an unmemorable episode. In a nutshell. I mean, you really can. In a nutshell, the old man dies, Paradine throws the book on the fire, he doesn't want to renounce God, and they move on to fight and lose the Battle of Gettysburg without the help of the old black magic. Ho-hum, ho-hum. You know, so my rating for this is one. Poor, 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 poor. Bear Fan Ron, though. Bear Fan Ron is saying that he didn't think the episode was that bad. Oh, Ron, I wish you would call in. You should call in so we could find out more about your opinions on this. But he doesn't think it was that bad. So I'm going to turn this over to Robert.
Well, we got our friend here. He wanted to say something. So.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Horse, what did you think of this episode?
No, sir. I didn't like it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Horace, because I know
didn't
one
like
wanted
all.
To
didn't
hear
like
that
it
thing.
At all. No, sir. Mr. Horace, Bear Fan Ron has never heard of Mr. Horace. Oh, that's oh.
What's the matter with you? You don't watch Ren and Stimpy. You're an idiot.
That's right, Ren and Stimpy. we have another caller here, or another member here. The name is Ed. Hi, Ed. And he says Ren and Stimpy rocked. All right. Yes, indeed. Clap, clap, clap. Yes. After your time, yeah, I bet, Rare Friend. Bear Fan says after his time. Go ahead, Robert. We're having fun with everybody. Go ahead.
Well, you know, the whole thing with this is I give it a little bit better. I give it a 2 out of 5. I thought it was a little better story, but I did not feel it was as great as The Passerbys. And you know how well I like The Passerbys. I thought that was a nice little piece of Civil War. It kind of reminded me of something from Gone with the Wind or something like that. But this is an average story. I like the one scene, and I don't think you brought it up, is where Paradine, how you like you said we want to pronounce it, gets a taste of magic himself, where he's frozen. And as an example, the old warlock. You might as well call him a warlock because he was a male witch, in other words. And then after being unfrozen, the old man explains to him that it's the work of witchcraft. Ooh, also the name on the book, which he mentioned. And that Satan had his hand on what happened to the soldiers. Well, the whole thing was, too, that the old, like you said, the old man was dying. He wanted to pass the powers on to you. But the whole thing is, it brings up the question, are you willing to sacrifice God to win a war? Is basically what the episode meant to me. And, you know, towards the end, they rather not have spiritual interference, so to say, and sacrifice more soldiers there in Gettysburg, which was the next campaign coming up. To me, I thought it was a nicely contained story. My question is also, besides the whole God thing, would the spell work on a full-scale basis? And the whole thing playing with time in this episode, you kind of have then, as with Fringe, and I don't know if anybody watches Fringe, you can have an alternate timeline, and where you would have, you know, whatever the year was, 18, what was it, 63, 64, something like that, where it would veer off into another time stream. So just the stoppage of time, you know, as I don't want to stomp on Dave's thing where he always says that, you know, Rod takes two bites of the cherry, which, you know, this one, he definitely did. Instead of spacemen, let's instead have soldiers in this one. Instead of the caretaker, let's have the old warlock, so to say, with this one. And instead of using potion, let's use a book. So, I mean, it's all pretty much just the same story, but, you know, rewritten. And of course, it's another curse object, episode. I love to refer to that because, and I am a fan of Friday the 13th, the series. I know you are, Lynn, because you, I played some clips on the show, which I do today have a clip from Friday the 13th, the series, so I'll play that in a bit here. Yeah, it's another curse object. It kind of reminds me of the picture of Dorian Gray, which Dorian would stay young, but his picture would grow old and take on his impurities of life. And it really brings about the question of, if you're a believer in God, would you renounce him for great power? Is what it came down to. But like I said, I like the passerbys a lot better than I did with this episode. But the whole time element I did like about this story, and I think that's pretty much why I give it an average, 2 out of 5. And speaking of Friday the 13th series, there was an episode in Season 2, Episode 9, called 13 O'Clock. And here is the promo and a clip for that.
Time is a curse on Friday the 13th.
It's a time known in the occult as 13 o'clock.
A kind of witching hour that bestows an awesome power.
The ability to stop time and have everything you want for 1 hour.
There's just one small requirement.
Evil events from evil causes spring.
It's a date with death. When the clock strikes terror, it's time for Friday the 13th, the series. Next week, time waits for no one.
You wouldn't believe it, Jack. Everything was frozen in time, like some black and white photo.
Thanks. Yeah, and I didn't see anything at all. 1 second, Ryan was running after her, and the next, he was lying by the tracks. There was no sensation of time stopping at all.
When exactly did this happen?
It's like 3 o'clock now, so...
It's 2. Your watch must be fast.
So I've got 2, isn't it?
What?
No, Mickey, he's right. Touching Mrs. Wilkerson and that watch must have drawn Ryan into the force field so that he was moving through time just as she was, as the rest of the world stood still.
The curse lasts exactly 1 hour.
Yes, now I'll wager that that hour begins at 1 a.m. like the others.
It's a time known in the occult as 13 o'clock.
And that very much is the info dump. And you always know the scene where the info dump is, where Jack explains what the object is and what it can do.
Yeah.
Since, you know, they're trying to hunt all those objects down. So.
Right.
But yeah, I remember that episode, and it started out with an old man, and this woman takes the watch from the old man and decides to take a shopping spree and do some undesirable things where they could freeze time with the pocket watch. So that's pretty much what that episode was about. As I said, with this, I give it a 2 out of 5, and I'm going to pass it on to Bobby.
Oh, do I have to, really?
Well, you're the birthday boy. We should have had you going first this time instead of Lynn.
No, thank you. If you want me to go first some week, pick something I like. Don't pick this. Let's see. What is there to say about this? Let me think an hour and a half. Absolutely nothing. There's nothing to say about this. It's absolutely horrible. I mean, I can appreciate that other people like it. I always try to respect other people's opinions, but I want no part of it. I've seen this episode now 3 times in the past couple of weeks. It was on TV, on the MeTV network as part of their Twilight Zone that they run weeknights.
A little marathon.
And I fell asleep about 15 minutes into that. And then I tried to watch it again on DVD about a week or so later, and I fell asleep about 10 minutes into it. And yesterday, Lynn and I watched it again, and I fell asleep again after it began. And then this morning, I watched it myself, and I finally managed to stay awake, only because I sat up straight in the most uncomfortable position I could find so that I would stay awake. But that didn't help any. I have absolutely no interest in this story whatsoever. None. I'm not a fan of the Civil War anyway, but that's irrelevant because if it was a good story, I might get interested in it. But this is just, they call it Still Valley, but I refer to it as Stillborn Valley because the whole episode is stillborn, is dead before it ever gets here. There's just nothing, there's nothing happening in it at all. I don't like it. And I bring a certain amount of prejudice to it because I've never been able to stand Gary Merrill at all in anything he's ever done. I think he's the ugliest actor in the history of Hollywood. I can't stand looking at him. And this story is just bland, and it's even poorly filmed. It doesn't even look like it's the Civil War. They look like they're on a back lot in Hollywood, which is exactly where they are. And it just doesn't look real at all. It just doesn't, and it's not involving or engaging in any respect. And this is just the beginning. This is the beginning of my dreaded three episodes in a row, starting with this one and then the jungle next time, and then that awful, dreadful Once Upon a Time after that. 3 terrible episodes in a row in a classic TV series is really unforgivable. Everybody thinks I expect it to be great every week, which is nonsense. That's ridiculous. But I do expect there's a certain standards, and this isn't it. I have no idea why Rod Serling saw this episode written by somebody else and decided to write a screenplay for it. I don't know.
Well, you know what was funny, Bobby, was last night on MeTV they were showing Disturbed Man.
Yeah, and we watched it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
we watched it.
It just is. It's just. I don't know. It's nothing. I just sit there and watch it and wonder, you know, what the point of the whole thing is. It just rambles on and on and on. And doesn't end anywhere. Lynn, in her review and time she talks about the only interesting thing in it, and that is to watch these extras try to stand there and stay still without moving any, and most of them aren't able to do it. So that's about the only amusing part of it. They're supposed to be frozen there, but a lot of them are moving. Other than that, it's just boring. That's all. It's just boring. I'll probably never watch it again. I've tried to watch it. Like I said, I got through it today. I managed to get through the whole thing, and I simply stared at the screen and wondered why in the world I even did that. I gave it a 0 in my review, and I have no reason to change that because I can't get a single solitary thing out of it at all.
Do you think Gary Merrill is uglier than John Malkovich?
Yes.
Really? John Malkovich would be very happy to hear that.
And last night, Lynn and I watched Gary Merrill. Remember that movie, Lynn, Crash Landing?
Oh, the only horrible movie from the 50s
or something, yeah.
It's the only time I've ever seen a movie where a pilot is landing, crash landing a plane with a smile on his face.
He's as calm as can be.
I was absolutely stunned. This is the weirdest movie. He's crash landing the plane. He knows where they're all going to die.
Well, wait a minute. Maybe he's a years before version of that real life pilot who landed in the Hudson River, Sully Sullenberger. He managed to keep his cool, too. So maybe that's what it is.
Well, it's one thing to keep your cool, but you don't smile. I mean, he's smiling. He's smiling like, okay, well, we'll see where this gets us. It's going to get you dead. You know, you're crashing.
All right, we landed. Let's go out and see what's out there.
Let's see what we can do. Well, if we survive this, let's all go out and have a hoedown.
Well, I sure didn't smile.
I know,
this
it could
episode.
Have been worse than Ed Wood in Plan 9 from Outer Space.
I'd rather see that. Thank you. All right, it gets a zero for me. Please do not ever make me watch it again because I won't.
Okay,
okay.
All right. Well, we've got Ed on the phone now, but before, well, Ed just muted himself, but we're going to go right back to, we're going to go to Dave now. Dave.
Well, I mean, I quite enjoyed watching it, but you're right.
On.
It's not. Well, I mean, I did because I haven't seen it for so long. I watched it earlier today, and having not seen it for about 20 years, I enjoyed it, but...
That's not long enough. Wait longer than that.
Yeah. The point is...
It doesn't mature
is,
with age, Dave, unfortunately. Like wine.
No, well, perhaps I get more... I don't know. The point is, there just wasn't enough plot to sustain even the limited time run. I mean, one of the things about Twilight Zone episodes, of course, is that there are only 22 or 3 minutes, and... In a way, we've sometimes bemoaned the fact that that hasn't really been long enough to develop the story. Well, this story felt fairly well stretched out to breaking point because it was really a page of A4, and so I would agree definitely with Bobby on that. I also agree with Lynn on the... if you have a book of witchcraft, the last thing you do is have the word witchcraft written on the front of the book. I mean, if you want to get shot, burnt, stoned, you know... I mean, you might have a euphemism for it, like, you know, the old-time religion or...
That
you know,
old
the,
black magic, yeah, something.
Something that would hide it, because, I mean, once you're found in possession of a book like that, I mean, you're for the hangman's noose, I would have thought.
Well, Satan didn't know how bright the owner of the book would be, so he put witchcraft on there to make it easy.
Yeah. The other inconsistency, of course, was that we saw the old man, played by the actor, is it...
Vaughn Taylor.
Who's it? Yeah, Vaughn Taylor, who, by the way, nobody's mentioned here, was in about 5 episodes of Twilight Zone, so he must be up with your Burgess Meredith, nearly.
Dave, where were you earlier? Were you here? Are we at the same show?
Well, in terms of quality.
Well, even Burgess Meredith would have been better in this. He could have played the old man.
I meant in the number of episodes that he's appeared in.
Wait a second. Dave, were you here earlier when I gave my review, my summary? I said he was in A Time Enough at Last, and he was in I Sing the Pottery Electric. I didn't know he was in any more. Oh, yes, and he was
Incredible
also
Word
in,
of Horace Ford, The Self-Improvement
right,
of Salvador
Ford, yeah.
Ross. So
oh,
he's been
Salvador
in 5.
Ross, yeah. Oh, I so didn't know he was in Horace Ford.
Yeah, that's what
oh,
I'm saying. There's not many actors that have been in 5 of them.
That's true. The only one I think has come close to him, or maybe is Cyril Delavante, the real old man. Yeah, Cyril Delavante. But yeah, I thought. Didn't you hear me mention he was in Time Enough at Last? And
yeah. But I mean, the point is, I think your favorite actor has been in about 6. So this chap being in 5 is pretty
very close.
Yeah, indeed. But the other thing that was inconsistent, of course, was that twice this old man used the incantation on screen, and then when the chap was reporting to his senior officer, he said that he'd passed, a patrol, and he'd used an incantation on those, and that was confirmed when the captain came back with his patrol. And yet, it's only when he decides that he's going to disable the whole of the cavalry that he reads the bit where he says he has to denounce, God. But presumably, do you not have to do that each and every time you do the spell? I mean, what was the difference? Had he turned to the page where it said, do a spell at a distance, and therefore you have to use this incantation? It was a little bit inconsistent on that.
That was pretty
or at least put witchcraft backwards. Instead of being frontwards, write it backwards. Nobody would. I don't know if anybody would figure that out or not. Unless you put it up in a mirror.
Yeah, but having said that, it was a morality tale that was really not only a short story, it was a very short story. As Robert said, it's the two bites of the cherry thing, isn't it? And the fact that it was all done in like a setup, the campsite, reminded me a little bit of one or two of the time tunnel episodes I've watched, where not necessarily in the Civil War. I think they've been in the time
did
tunnel.
A Civil War
in,
one.
They've been certainly in one with the Battle of Little Bighorn and one between the English and the
Americans.
Yeah, because
remember it had the guy that played Archie, Carol O'Connor.
Yeah.
Remember he was in the Civil War. Carol O'Connor played a
yeah, the
like
last
a general
patrol
or something. Or
some, the Last Patrol, I think it was called.
Yeah.
And it reminded me a little bit about that sort of style of story. But really, there isn't a lot to actually say. It was a morality tale. Of course, it wasn't adapted from science fiction or fantasy. Was it Manly Wade Wellman?
Who
wrote a lot of horror/sci-fi come fantasy stories, surprisingly, with a lot of them, with the word devil in. The Devil's Asteroid, The Devil's Planet, I'm looking at some of the others.
So out of all those stories that this guy wrote, you think you would have picked something a little bit better, you know?
Yeah.
You had a lot of stories to choose from.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think basically it was a filler, wasn't it? It was a story they used to fill in a week. Nothing to write home about. It was
exactly what I thought.
It was stretched to breaking point. But on the other hand, I quite like the actual concept.
Yeah.
That's me done, really. And my name is Ed. Seems to be ready to go.
Your rating?
Oh, yeah.
Or did I miss
it?
I'm going to be generous and say, I dare in front of Bobby, I'll say 2.5. I dare say 3, dare I?
Wow. Oh,
say
what
you
want
to say, Dave.
Well, we have a new person here, Ed. I'm so glad to see you here.
Hey, you guys.
Please,
hey, Ed.
How's it going?
Please join us. That's great. Good to see you.
Good, good. It's kind of coincidental. I actually happened to see this. I happened to see this episode last night. So
really?
Yeah. Just by coincidence. And I got a few thoughts on it. My volume is going all over the place here. I can see it on screen.
Oh,
you sound great. No, you sound great to us.
Okay, I have a second, guys. I'm going to try fixing this here. All right. Wacky computer.
Yeah,
okay. Sorry about that. Anyway.
No, you sound
perfect. Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, no, I had a couple of thoughts, actually. I definitely agree with you on the name of the book was just too hokey, way too hokey. I mean, Rod Serling was such a creative man and put together such solid shows that – when I saw that it just stuck out like a sore thumb, I said, really, Rod? You couldn't have maybe just tweaked that a little bit, given it some kind of a creative name? I mean, you think like, for instance, in To Serve Man, okay? It was a clever pun, it meant two things. And it was the name of the book, and it kind of set the tone of the show, And then you've got witchcraft. Just witchcraft, that's all. I don't know. That just made me laugh when I saw it. But and then there's the use of the magical terms. Apparently, all you have to do is aim it towards somewhere in the distance, and that does it for that particular geographic region. That was kind of funny. And then the whole scene where they're at the fire and he's talking about how they're dealing with the devil and he's about to say the spell, and then suddenly, oh my goodness, he's remorseful. They're going to throw it in the fire. I don't know. It was definitely a bad episode. No question about it.
Absolutely.
I probably would have.
Nice to have a little screaming from the book when it went in the fire.
Oh, wasn't that
yeah, that
was
great.
Yeah, that was
well,
a good one.
That,
good one, Rod. That would have been great.
That's a bit strange when you think about it. I mean, if this is the devil's book, should be quite at home in the flames.
Oh, good. Now there's enough. Everybody's got all these good points today.
Yeah, we could have done a little Army of Darkness with that book there. If anybody's seen Army of Darkness.
Absolutely.
Three books.
Absolutely.
He never told me there was going to be three books here, and he goes and has to, you know, check to see which one's a real book. They should have had something like this with this.
Yeah, you think it has to be Holy Water, wouldn't you? Pour Holy Water over it or something.
And the NC is going totally up in flames. Absolutely. That'd be terrific. Yeah.
Or somebody comes out of the book in the flames or something, like some kind of demon or something.
See, you shouldn't have done that. You'll lose your library card.
Hey, Phoenix. Felix. Felix here.
Felix. Oh, Felix is here. I was wondering where you were. That time you got. Yeah, I almost forgot about this.
As the name of Ed, has he finished his points and a rating?
Oh, I think that's probably... I probably finished all the points anybody would want to hear, I guess. But yeah, I'm all set. I'm just enjoying listening to you guys banter.
What's your rating there, Ed?
Out of
yeah.
five?
1 to 5. Five being the highest.
5 being the highest? I'd say a 2. Wasn't terrible. Wasn't terrible, but it was definitely not a high point in the show, the whole span of that series. That's for sure.
What do you think, Bobby? Did you think it wasn't terrible?
Talking to me?
Yeah. Ed.
You talking to me?
Yeah.
You talking to me?
You're not going to change 50. Bobby's mind. If it's terrible, it's terrible, right, Bobby?
Minus 50.
Ed gives it a 2.
Well, actually,
minus,
on the side here, I'm on the site right here looking at it, and 2 seems to be the big one out of this. It went from 0 to 2.5, it looks like. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people giving it a 2. Two people give it 2.5. We had 1 give it a 1.5. And you gave it a 1, and somebody else gave it a 1. And then, Bobby, you had 2 other people to join you with that 0. So.
What did I give it? I gave it a 1.
Yeah, you gave it a 1. Yeah.
Yeah.
Circular 1948 gave it a 1 also. So.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Funny. Yeah. Okay. All right, yeah. Well, you know, Felix says 2.5 is too high. Felix said 2.5 to 5 is too high. All right, well, Felix, what do you give it then? What do you give it?
But nobody
give
it a 3. Nobody give it a 4. Nobody give it a 4.5. And nobody definitely.
Oh, that's
didn't
for
give
sure.
I was tempted by the devil to give it a 3.
The devil made you do it. The devil made you do it. Well, Felix gives it a 2. All right, Felix, you give it a 2. Yeah, he gives it a 2.
Bear Fan Ron gives it 2.5 as well.
And Bear Fan Ron gives it a 2.5. All right, so it's somewhere between a 1 and a, yeah, 1 and a 2.5.
0.
Yeah.
Don't forget the 0.
Oh, 0,
I guess that counts as a point.
Oh, goodness. Well, if you think this is something, Wayne, we've got a couple more coming up here.
Oh, my. Yes.
My. All right.
I can't wait till Once Upon a Time. That is going to be such a good one to
talk about. I might be out of town then. I may be.
And the barbershop helmet. Oh, geez. The barbershop.
I might have to be out of town that day. maybe I'll go back to Philadelphia that day.
Well, why,
hey,
in honor of that show,
would have been
in honor of that show, why don't we do a silent version of the show?
Silent version, right, exactly.
Even a Greek would be embarrassed with that hat or helmet or whatever time contraption you want to call that thing.
That was horrible. Felix does say that. Felix says, Felix, my dear, you say that that this episode wasn't rubbish like some other stinkers. Well, I agree with Felix. This was not. Believe me, there are episodes way worse than this than Still Valley. I mean, we haven't come up on my bottom of the barrel.
Just
yet
wait to the showdown with Rance.
Oh, yeah. But that's probably my number 2. But I'll tell you, you haven't even gotten to my bottom of the barrel yet. My bottom of the barrel episode doesn't come until season 5. And I'm telling you, it is not just the bottom of the barrel. It is the sludge on the bottom of the barrel. That is, to me, the most horrible episode ever in Twilight Zone history. I'm not going to say it because I want to wait till we get to it. But, yeah, this makes Still Valley makes that one look like Still Valley. That one makes Still Valley look like a masterpiece. It does. The one that I hate the most makes Still Valley look like a masterpiece.
So you need like a putty knife just to get it off the bottom there, huh?
Just okay. To get it off. I'm telling you, in season 5, the one that I hate the most, you need a knife to sludge it off the bottom of the barrel. I hate it that much. But anyway.
That's not exactly a compliment that makes this one look like a masterpiece.
Well,
that one's so bad, that makes this one look like a masterpiece. That's a compliment?
I'm telling you, the one...
That's like saying that Osama bin Laden makes Hitler look like a choir boy. You know?
I'm saying that the one that I hate the most in season 5 is so bad that it makes Still Valley look good. I'm telling you, the one from season 5 that I hate the most, and I will not say its name, is so bad it makes this one look good. It's that bad. However, we are getting to the end of this show, and we are going to talk about 2 weeks from now, aren't we? 2 weeks, 2 weeks from now. The 12th, is that, or we miss Cinco de Mayo is May 5th. We miss Cinco de Mayo, and we go into May 12th, which is the jungle. Nah, yes,
oh, my.
Dave. Thank you, Dave. Yes, Dave has put that up there, the jungle with John Denner. John Danner, who I actually like, but not so much in this episode, but that one is the 12th, and 2 weeks after that will be Once Upon a Time, which we don't want to even discuss.
Lions
that
and tigers and bears. Oh,
bears.
My.
Oh, no.
Lions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my. Lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my. I forgot about that, yeah.
I'll have to bring up The Lion Sleeps Tonight for that episode. In the jungle, to cry a jungle, the lion
sleeps
tonight.
Robert, do you want to make it to 50? I think you should stop.
Well, no, I think Robert and I should go on the road. We should, I think we should go on the road and have a whole new band.
Oh
yeah,
my! You know you're tempting me to go to the jungle and us being actually in the jungle doing this episode next time.
Uh-oh. Oh, you are trouble. You are trouble.
I know.
All right, May 12th.
As that baby dinosaur says, you gotta love me, gotta love me,
gotta love me. Saturday, May 12th. We are going to be doing the jungle and, I do hope we'll see everyone here at that time. Felix, you're usually here. Bear fan, you're hardly ever here, so it'd be nice to see you here again. And Ed,
yes.
It was great having you here. I would like you to stick around after we close out.
Absolutely.
I want to talk to you. Yeah, I want to talk to you.
Be afraid.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. Oh, and we have Luis. Luis is here. Oh, Luis, I hope you come around. We got a lot of people in here today that some didn't stay, but some did, and people here that I haven't seen before. So, okay, 2 weeks from now, the jungle, and hopefully everyone will be here, and I want to see Ed here, but I'd like to talk to him after the show. So, okay, we are about done. So have a wonderful weekend, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Oh, yes, goodbye.
That was the fire from the episode.
Now Jimmy chose the Yankee blue. His heart was on their side. But brother Billy joined the Rebs, and how their mother cried. They both shook hands and kissed their mom. There wasn't much to say. One headed north, the other south. The blue against the gray. It was brother fighting brother, father fighting son. A war that both sides had to lose. no matter which side won. I want to tell you, I've walked beneath the trees and beside the streams where some of those battles were fought, and it's so beautiful there. And it's peaceful now. It's hard to believe that that stillness and silence was once shattered by the thunder of cannon and the ring of fire. There's such a place down in Georgia where some of my folks come from. And one of the most touching stories that I've ever heard actually happened there during the Civil War. And it's a true story that some of the old people still tell. The enemy held a hill, and on the line was a shallow creek. Below and in the trees was the enemy across the water ankle deep. And in the water lay from both sides, some face up, some face down. Men who tried to scale the ledge and men who tried it down. The leader on the ledge yelled, "Cease fire!" Then began to speak. He said, "You can go ahead and kill me, enemy, but I'm taking my wounded men from the creek." Then out stepped an officer from the trees and a ceasefire, and he also said, "Sir, come on down and I'll save my men who aren't yet dead." Well, the medics followed from both sides, finding life in a dozen or more. They gently lifted the wounded up and laid them on the shore. Smoke comes silently on the line while both sides doctored their men. Then both officers saluted and said, "Regroup, begin the fight again." Yeah, but they all returned to their positions and the soft breeze cleared the sky and somebody muttered, "North, south, east or west. It's hell to have to die." Well, neither officer shouted fire. The soldiers talked and sang. Rifles leaned against the trees and from somewhere laughter rang. After a long time, silence was on the line till finally night was near. Then from the ledge a command was heard, and below a voice said, "Men, did you hear? Pack up your gear, men, retreat. The other side's retreating too. We've held them on the line. That's the best that we can do."
Thank you.